Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 45, recorded March 21st, 2012. Leah Buskey. Triangulation is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control to help protect against crashes on curves. Look for Curve Control, available in the 2013 Ford Taurus. Learn more at Ford.com/cars/Taurus. It's time for Triangulation, a show in which Tom Merritt and I form two legs of an unstable stool, but we add a third, and then suddenly, miraculously, it stands.
Stool.
Is that where we got the idea?
That's where we are.
I don't think so. Blame John C. Dvorak for the name. It was his idea, but we only did one show, and since we've done quite a few shows, always interviewing somebody who's doing something interesting, somebody super smart, somebody who's changing the world, and I think Leah Busk is a very good example of that, our guest today on TaskRabbit, and in studio with us, which makes it even better. On Triangulation. She's the founder of TaskRabbit. Hi, Leah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. What is TaskRabbit?
TaskRabbit is an online and mobile marketplace where people can go to outsource small jobs and tasks to others in their neighborhood. So if you need dry cleaning picked up, groceries delivered, your house cleaned, you can put that request up on TaskRabbit. Our TaskRabbits bid on your job, and then you get to choose who you want to work with, usually based on price, reputation, profiles.
Now, when you say our TaskRabbit, you're vetting people. This isn't just an Airbnb where you just don't know.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's a huge differentiator for us, and something that's really different about our model is that 100% of our TaskRabbit network is a closed community. They go through a four-step vetting process that includes an online application, a video interview, a series of background checks that include a social security number trace, a federal criminal background check. There's about five that we do. And then just like when you go to the DMV, you have to read the little booklet and then take the quiz to get your license to drive. All of our TaskRabbits read a manual and then take a quiz to get their license to run. And we do this as part of a training process because we realize...
Give us a sample question.
Well, this is why we do it. We realize that they're really our first line of customer service out
That's
in the
right.
field. So if someone has a question about payments, how do I close out a job, they have to be able to answer that.
That's What's fair. One of the questions on the test?
So it's things like, you know, how do you close out a job? How do you get paid? What if there are reimbursement expenses? That's a typical one. So.
What if your client is a hoarder?
And wants you to clean up?
Yeah.
What if you find a body in the rubble?
Oh, my God.
No, we don't do that.
Yes.
How long did it take you to learn that pitch of what TaskRabbit is?
Oh, my God.
Did you polish that? Did you have to polish that? Did you
can't
write it out?
I can't even remember now. Honestly, it's been so long. Yeah, I've been doing this since 2008.
It was your idea originally?
Yeah.
Tell us how it happened.
Yeah, so I was a software engineer at IBM. I spent 7 years there as a programmer.
Doing what?
Working on Lotus Domino and Lotus Notes. So I actually started at the smaller
we
startup.
We like you any. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. We're not big Lotus Notes fans. Ziff Davis made us use Lotus
totally,
Notes.
It's totally fine. I can
Domino
take it.
Was okay, though.
Yeah, no, Domino was solid. But actually started at Iris Associates, which was Ray Ozzie's company. And then we all got...
So you worked for Ray
yes,
and then went over.
All got merged into Lotus and then IBM.
Oh, that's neat.
And so, you know, worked on archiving and email and same time, their instant messaging system. But it's interesting because when I think back about that, it was all about creating software that made people productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually think that that's influenced a lot of my thinking and decisions around TaskRabbit as well, because I'm obsessed with sort of productivity and efficiency. And I was sitting at home one night with my husband, Kevin. We were getting ready to go out to dinner, and we realized we were out of dog food. And we have this 100-pound yellow lab named Kobe that just had to eat that night. And this was February of 2008.
What is it with dogs? They always want to eat.
They always want to eat. It's really exhausting to feed
and they
them.
And they never cook for themselves.
I know. They just don't pull their own weight at all. But that's where the inspiration for the company happened, because we thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if there's just a place online we could go, say we needed dog food, name the price we're willing to pay. We were certain that there was someone in our own neighborhood that'd be willing to help us out. Maybe even someone at the store at that very second. And it was just a matter of connecting with them.
Did you
Why
think
didn't that exist?
Did you go online initially and say, something like that must exist?
Absolutely.
You figured somebody must have invented
somebody
that.
Somebody must have done this already. Absolutely.
And you were shocked to find nothing.
I was shocked, yeah. And you know what? I've learned it's not an easy problem to solve.
That's why.
It's not an easy business to build.
Had you ever written mobile apps or a website or anything like that? You'd never done anything like this.
I hadn't. I did all C++ and
right.
Java, assembly, like really old legacy code.
Well, at least you did the harder stuff.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, actually using Ruby on Rails was like taking a vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
from
so,
the day job.
So, okay, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because I want to talk about Rails. But so you said, okay, well, maybe we should do this.
Yeah.
Did you say, Kevin, I want to do this or...
It took about 4 months.
What's his background? Is he a programmer,
He's
too?
He's also in technology. He's not a programmer. He's in infrastructure, servers.
That's handy, though.
Super
that
handy,
comes in
right? Because
yeah.
I could code it, and then he could host it.
Right.
And it was kind of the perfect combination
right.
there.
Yeah. You just need a designer.
I know. Oh, we waited forever. I am not. I
mean,
am like
you got somebody
designer,
now because it looks
too.
Great.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
generally speaking, server guys and programmers don't really design
no.
the most beautiful.
No. Sometimes they
the
think
world.
They can. I thought I could.
So. So how long from the insight that you, this would be a good... So you said this would be a good business.
Yeah.
Did you then immediately say, let's do it?
I honestly, before... we had called the cab to come pick us up for dinner. The cab arrived within 5 minutes. Before he even arrived, I went on my iPhone and I was like, if this site existed, what would it be called?
Right.
And at the time, I typed in the name runmyerrand.com and it was available. Domains are never available.
Yeah, right. So, especially something that makes sense.
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
you register it?
I bought it on the spot. And that was it. But it took about 4 months of networking with people. And by the way, 20 minutes after I bought it, I hated the name.
Really?
So, yeah. So we changed the name about a year later.
I love TaskRabbit.
Yeah. It's a much better name and brand. And I think it exudes the vision much more than the other name did. Yeah.
So it took you 4 months to go from the kernel.
Yeah.
Did you quit your job immediately or did you?
No, it took me about 4 months to quit my job, to get up enough courage to actually say, you know what, there's something here.
So what was the first step that you did in pursuing this?
The first thing I did was I just talked to anyone that would listen to me. I didn't care if it was like the guy in the coffee shop. I networked my way up into a meeting with Scott Griffith, who's the CEO of Zipcar. I didn't know Scott ahead of time
That's
in advance.
Neat. Just an informational interview, kind of? Or?
Yeah, well, I was chatting with people, networking, and one woman out of the blue said, you know, my buddy Scott would think your idea is really cool. You should just email him. And
uh-huh.
she gave me his email address. I had no idea he was the CEO of Zipcar. I mean, ignorance is bliss at that moment, right?
Right, when you don't know what you can't achieve, yeah, you get it anywhere.
So I went home and I sent him a cold email. And I said, hey, you know, your friend said you'd really think my idea is cool. Let's chat. And to his credit, he wrote back pretty quickly. And he's just really supportive of innovation, and particularly in the Boston area where Zipcar is located. And so Scott was key in that 4 months because we started meeting regularly and we really hit it off. And I was still at IBM at the time. And he was kind of like, you know, I think you're onto something. I think you should see how far you can take it. And he just kept saying that to me. And finally it sunk in and I was like, well, I'm going to see how far I can take this. And that's what really got me to leave IBM and start coding the site myself.
So he really mentored you. That's
she
really neat.
He did. Yeah. I would not be here without him in the beginning.
So he was the one that got you to that point to say, okay, fine, I'm quitting my job.
Yeah, exactly. And I talked to a lot of folks and I remember coming home one day from one of these meetings and saying to my husband, Kevin, I was like, you know what? No one is telling me this is an insane idea. I'm not getting that feedback. Everyone is saying, you should build this. This is really great. Why doesn't this exist? And I was like, I should just build it. Like, can we do that? And so we kind of, you know, we looked at our finances and we owned a house in Boston and it was, you know, two incomes and a mortgage and we kind of.
And a dog to feed.
And a dog to feed every single night. And we kind of figured out that we had basically 6 months where I could quit my job. I would have 6 months and. Let's see what we can do in
did
6 months.
Did Kevin keep working?
He did.
So he was kind of, okay, I'll keep working.
Yes.
And now, okay, so now you've got to figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah.
Did you start researching Ruby on Rails? Did you immediately say that's the way to do it?
Yeah, I looked at Ruby on Rails. I looked at Django as some popular web frameworks that were up and coming. And I ended up doing an on-lamp tutorial one weekend, Ruby on Rails. Did the little cookbook recipe tutorial.
Yeah,
if anyone's done that.
It's great.
It's great.
I've done it, yeah.
Yeah, I did it over a weekend. I was like, I got this.
That's fun.
No problem.
Yeah, I get it.
It
does so much for you.
Yes, exactly.
And you can iterate. So now you can make changes. You can you can just at least throw something on the wall.
Yep. And that's exactly what I did. I just started building features, and I set up this...
Who did you show it to? Did you say, look at this Kevin? Or did you say, look at this Scott? Or what did you... How did that...
Anyone who's willing to look at it. Anyone.
Come here. Look at
this. Honestly, I would sit at my local coffee shop. I lived in this neighborhood called Charlestown in Boston. Mm-hmm. My favorite coffee house, Zumi's Coffee House, is really where TaskRabbit was born. I would just hang out there all day long. I would code. I would call people over and say, hey, what do you think about this feature? What do you think about that? Will you try this out? And I just was constantly getting feedback.
So. You must have been having fun at this point.
Honestly, it was one of the best summers of my life.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Yeah, all I did was code all day for like 10 weeks straight.
And what kind of features were you building at that part? Because you didn't have a team of vetted TaskRabbits.
No,
yeah, you really. It's not in a working site yet. You're just kind of putting in the plumbing.
I mean, you have to put in login, and then, oh, someone forgets their password. You have to be able to handle that case. And then credit cards, you have to be able to handle payment. So it was a lot of the basic things. And then the core of the site at that point was the form to post a task, you know, and those first iterations on what it looked like to post a task were so difficult and so sort of bare and you know, really easy early on. And I started to learn what sort of questions I needed to ask and what were the issues if I didn't get enough information up front with actually matching people on the other side. And I actually ran it in a closed sort of test environment for a while, not with real TaskRabbits, but with friends and family and just people utilizing the service to see how people would interact.
Mm-hmm.
And then to start the site, I launched in September of that year, of 2008, with a working beta that I felt pretty decent about. And I launched with two groups. On one side, I went to this Charlestown Mothers Organization, which was 600 moms in one square mile of Boston. And I was like, okay, they're going to be the perfect target, you know, to utilize the service.
Yeah.
They're busy. They're juggling a lot. And on the other side, I went out and recruited 30 TaskRabbits to start the site. And those initial 30...
How did you do that?
Yeah. It's a good question, because those initial 30...
Because you got nothing right now. It's all on spec.
Right. And I had no idea who I would get involved, who would be interested in running these jobs, how much they would want to get paid, all these things, right?
How you could figure out who's good, who to trust, all that stuff.
Exactly.
How did you do that?
So I interviewed over 30-minute coffee meetings every single TaskRabbit that started the site. Yeah, and some of them
Zumi
are still...
Zumi must love you.
They do. They actually, I went back and visited.
They
and
should
they just,
put a plaque up there. This is... Yeah. Leia Busk slept here. This is where TaskRabbit started.
I have my corner there. Yeah, they were super supportive. I did all my coffee interviews
That's really neat.
And, you know, I found that originally I thought Boston's a great college town. And I'll get all
college
these
kids.
College students to run tasks. Never the case. First big learning. And I had stay-at-home moms that were coming to interview with me for coffee who were already out at Target running
They're
their own errands
anyway.
Young professionals looking to supplement incomes, maybe nights and weekends. This sense of being underemployed or at that time unemployed as well. I mean, it was September of 2008. The stock market had just crashed. Everyone was being laid off. And then this awesome group of retirees that just were looking to stay active, like the idea of meeting other people in their neighborhood. And so I picked 30 of them to start the site and made the match between the Charlestown moms and the 30 TaskRabbits. And it just kind of blew up from there.
Now, what led you to decide, you know what, I need to interview these people and vet them? Because you did that right from the get-go.
I did,
Whereas when you were looking for the dog food, your original idea was like, oh, well, maybe somebody will just happen to be there. And that seems like more of the hip Web 2.0 idea. What led you from that point to the next?
It was that early customer feedback. It was the fact that I was sitting in the coffee shop and I was talking to potential customers the entire time I was building. And I learned very early on that people were skeptical and they were, you know, worried about trust and safety and security. And so that for me from day one was a big barrier that we had to overcome.
Yeah, and I would assume that you pick up a lot of ideas that way.
Absolutely.
when you're sitting there.
Yeah.
Do you still, you know, just not to jump out of the timeline too quickly, but how do you make sure you're still getting that kind of feedback?
It's incredibly important. We have set up, of course, when the company grows and scales and gets bigger, you need to put those processes in place that value that customer feedback. And for instance, every single week on Thursdays, we have customer development sessions where we just have a running group of customers coming in so that we can talk to them about whatever we need to that week. It could be product improvements, it could be marketing questions or ideas, operational questions, but just keeping that loop tight with your customers. And I think face-to-face in person as well is really important because you can have emails and you can have feedback forms and all that stuff's great, but if you're not like living and breathing it with them, it just is a difference.
And their motivation to come in is that they get to give feedback, or
we do gift cards for them for the service, and you know, Amex sometimes as well, and you know, it just really depends what type of customer we need to talk to that week as well, what sort of features we're working on. Yeah.
So getting back to your original 30 TaskRabbits, how'd it go?
Yeah, so it went great. So I was surprised about the demographic. And then I realized very quickly as word started to spread between these moms groups that all of a sudden people in Cambridge and Beacon Hill and Back Bay were trying to use the service, but I hadn't recruited TaskRabbits there yet, right? And so that's when automating that vetting process really started to come into play, and I started to think about how I could make that a whole pipeline. And so now that vetting process of the application and the background checks, it's all automated through our system, but we've iterated on it for the past couple of years.
So we're talking to Leah Buskey of Task. Is you like Leah or Leah?
Leah.
Leah Buskey of
Unless
Task. And I said Busk earlier.
Princess
Leah Buskey. And we're going to talk some more in just a second. Actually, Tinfoil Hat asked something before we go to the break. How do you stay motivated in those 4 months? Before you have customers, before anything's clicking, and you're just on your own doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. My personality is just pretty intense all the time anyway, and I think I'm so passionate about what we're building and the idea that you always know you're working towards something. And so if you're really excited about what you're doing, it's
so just you were internally motivated, and you just knew, and you felt good, and you kept doing it. That's neat. I love it. We'll have more with Leah in just a little bit. I want to mention Ford, our great sponsor, and their amazing curve control. You know, when I just think curve control for me would be very helpful, but this is, in fact, not that kind of curve control. We're talking about the 2013 Ford Taurus. If you visit Ford.com/cars/Taurus, you can take a look at a movie of how this curve control works, and it's really kind of impressive. It's just one of many just sophisticated technologies that Ford is building into its vehicles these days. They really are a 21st century car company that is engineering driven. And I think that's what we geeks kind of really enjoy about this. The curve control. So the car computer is the goal here is to keep you from oversteering, from trying to turn the car faster than it can based on road conditions, based on the weight of the car, the grip of the wheel, all of this stuff. So the car computer, here's what it's doing. Every 100 times every second, it's checking the roll rate, the yaw rate, the lateral acceleration, the wheel speed, the steering angle, calculating all that and saying, how's it working? How's it going? Is it okay? Okay now? Okay now? And if you should oversteer and start to put the car in a situation where it would skid or lose control, or maybe the back wheels would break away, it immediately reduces engine torque. It has a four-wheel braking system. It applies just so, reducing the speed of the car as much as 10 miles an hour per second. It works on wet or dry pavement. It's just constantly, as it's doing this, it's sensing it, giving you just enough. It's hard to describe, but when you try it, you will be amazed. You know, the first time I tried anti-lock brakes, I jammed my foot on the brakes, and I can't lock up, and it's amazing. This is like that. These are how technologies are getting into the vehicles to make it safer to drive, make it safer for you, the adaptive cruise control, the collision warning with brake support, the torque vectoring, all of this in the new 2013 Ford Taurus. I want you to take a look. Drive one at a Ford dealer near you or visit the website. I'm seeing if I can find the, because the movie is, yeah, here it is. This is the movie on the, no, that's the adaptive cruise control. Well, this is cool too. Ford.com/cars/Taurus. I love a car that is smarter than me because most of the time, frankly, I'm not that bright. Ford.com/cars/Taurus. We thank them so much for their support.
cool thing about the curve control too is that it's always working. It's not like just
it's constantly checking, and it's one of like all these other things that are going on.
Yeah.
The car is this is using computer technology to really make you a better driver. I think it's really neat. Leah Buskey is our guest. She is the founder of TaskRabbit, a programmer at IBM. When she had the brainstorm, gee, I wish somebody would just buy us some dog food, for crying out loud.
Kobe's hungry.
Now, if you go to TaskRabbit.com, you'll find people who will... Well, actually, this is a great story. Mark Fraunfelder wrote about this on St. Patrick's Day. Did you see this on Boing Boing? TaskRabbit delivered an awesome guy to help me move heavy crap, says Mark. Not only that, he made a friend, and I bet this happens often. So he had a bunch of heavy furniture to move. So he used TaskRabbit. A guy named Brett said he'd do it. He showed up with his cargo van. He said, we had fun, and then Brett is a bass player for a group, so he's been listening to their music. I bet this happens a lot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
People make friends with the rabbits.
They do. I mean, one of my favorite stories of all time, actually, is this mom here in San Francisco. She has a 20-year-old son living in Boston. And unfortunately, her son was going through chemotherapy treatment at Mass General Hospital. And she couldn't fly out there to be with him while he was doing this treatment. So she actually went on to TaskRabbit. She found, she posted a task and found someone to visit her son every day in the hospital for a week, to bring him a cozy blanket, a healthy meal, sit Aww. With him for 30 minutes every day, and then call her afterwards Aww. To give her the update.
Isn't that sweet?
And the TaskRabbit that picked it up in Boston was another mom. So these bond that these two moms formed
that
across the country, I mean, they've stayed in touch. It's just been amazing.
That's fantastic.
So
yes.
Stories like that happen all the time. It's really,
did
really
Did you get
exciting.
A lot of people waiting in line for the iPad?
We
Is that,
absolutely
that's a popular,
did.
I bet.
Yeah, we did. We we were in number two in line in San Francisco, a TaskRabbit was. So he was able to pick up a bunch of iPads for people. We had a few hundred across the country. It's just insane. Yeah.
So how did you get to San Francisco? So you're in Boston,
yeah.
And did you start? You started up in Boston. Everything's
I did.
Going.
Yeah. That's all I knew.
Did you
yeah.
have? Well, actually, before we get to San Francisco, you're paying for this out of your own pocket.
Oh yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? Because I mentioned my husband and I thought we had about 6 months,
right.
That I could do this, and so got to that 6 month point. And the site was launched, and people were using it. And Scott was actually starting to then introduce me to investors in the Boston area.
That's nice.
But September 2008, really bad time to raise money.
Yeah.
And
not
so,
a lot of money flowing around.
Not
right
a
then.
Lot of yeah. money. Not a lot of checks being written.
The reason you had lots of rabbits to choose from.
Yeah.
Everybody's out of work.
True.
Same
it's
reason
true.
You don't have a lot of money.
So it took about 9 months. The, that 3 months in between was a little hairy.
So yeah. did you? Where did you get your servers? Did you just go to some server company and rent servers? Or
yeah, I think early on, we weren't using Amazon yet because we felt like it was too expensive. We were
right.
using some other
some hosting company.
Hosting company. Yeah, yeah. exactly. And
like a dream host type
yeah,
of place.
Something
yeah,
like
something
that.
Cheap.
I don't even remember.
It doesn't
yeah.
matter at first because there's nobody using
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at first, I would sit there and like watch the logs of activity on the site and be like, oh, this person, right. let's see what pages they're clicking on.
You probably
on.
Can't do that anymore. Can't
can do
you?
That.
Was there an inflection point where you just started to get kind of hot? And
yeah, I mean, after I did that launch with the Mothers Organization and it started to spread across neighborhoods.
Right.
That's when, and it, luckily at that point is when I started talking to investors as well. And so I had a pretty good story of, you know,
they want to see this
growing.
Growth.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So two angel investors in Boston decided to put in $150,000 in March of 2009. And I was like, thank God.
And it, yeah, I bet it doesn't seem like that much money now. But at
you
that
know,
time, it was a mountain.
Well, it isn't compared
it was,
to what you've raised since. But we won't,
know,
we'll get to that.
it was an amazing feeling. And looking
yeah.
back, I mean, I had no idea how to raise money, how to build the company.
So did Scott help you with that? Or?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, he was one of those early mentors and advisors that just really guided
so
me through the whole process.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because you'd never done this before. You
no.
didn't know the process.
No, absolutely.
How much to give up for the $100,000, that kind of stuff.
I didn't even know. I was like, well, if people invest, what happens if the company fails? How do I give them their money
back? How do I pay
back?
It back?
Like, I don't understand how
right,
this works.
Right.
Honestly, I didn't know any
right.
of it. And so I had to learn a lot. There's a big learning curve there. But luckily, I had the right people around me to be supportive and help answer those questions.
That just shows how important it is, this mentorship.
It is.
This education
yeah.
in startups.
Yep.
It really becomes important.
Absolutely.
So
I think a lot of people underestimate how much it costs to get a business off the ground. I mean, they probably look at this and think, well, the rabbits are charging and you're just taking a cut. What are your other costs?
So what are your other costs?
Yeah, what are those things that you need to spend to get that business going?
Definitely the hosting was probably the major cost at that time. And then really it's about not being able to have any other income, right, for myself to work on other things. That was a big cost to us
personally.
Just
a salary to pay yourself. Yeah.
And then, you know, I did a little bit of marketing early on, particularly after we raised a little bit of seed money. Did very guerrilla-style marketing tactics.
What did you do?
Yeah, so those TaskRabbits that had helped me start the site, they would go out with flyers, with business cards, they would talk to people, and so it was actually like I had this little marketing army, you know, that was with me, which was really nice.
And it was in their best interest, too.
So, absolutely, yeah. So that really helped get the word out, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to move to the Bay Area?
So
You're doing great in Boston.
Yes. Yeah, right around that time I raised that angel round of money in Boston, Scott actually told me about this incubator program that Facebook was running out here in that summer of 2009. And I decided to apply, ended up being one of 25 companies invited to participate, and that brought me out here for 12 weeks over the summer of 2009.
So you're getting like close to a year old at this point?
Yeah, at that point. I had, you know, I'd quit IBM in June of 2008. This is now June of 2009, a year later. Yeah.
How fun. Now, this is like Y Combinator. There are a lot of these where they give you a little money. They pay your salary.
Yep, a little bit of money.
But it's really training. It's almost like going to school.
It was like a startup boot camp.
Yeah.
It was like I had no idea what to expect. And Dave McClure ran the program. And he just ran it like a boot camp. And it was awesome. It was exactly what I needed to get up to speed on actually how to build a company. And so I fell in love with the Bay Area as soon as I came out here. Ended up meeting awesome other advisors and investors that were located here and really decided that I wanted to build the company and the team in the Bay Area.
That was one of the questions our chat room wanted to know, is why the Bay Area? I mean, and this is a question a lot of cities ask, too. New York wants to be Silicon Alley. Boston, I'm sure. Austin. Every city wants to have this kind of... Is there something about San Francisco that,
you know,
makes it better?
I've got to say, because I've you know, lived in both places. I grew up in the Boston area. There's a different vibe out here, and it is a different culture. It's very much a startup mentality. You know, when you sit in coffee shops out here, I was really surprised because everyone around me
was
talking about startups.
Yeah.
You overhear conversations, and everybody's doing these amazing things. That doesn't happen so much in Boston. It's a little quieter. It's a little bit more, you know, oppressed to some extent. And honestly, it was more difficult on the East Coast to raise money for a really early stage consumer internet company. And
we have a whole ecosystem here for doing all of that.
It's just a little bit different.
Yeah. Yep. Did you find it useful to talk to other startup people, other entrepreneurs?
That was huge. I mean, doing that Facebook incubator program, the best part out of it was there were 24 other companies that I met, that I spoke with, and I realized I'm not in it alone.
Right.
These people are going through the same things that I am. And so that sense of community and culture really, you know, just drew me in.
How do you get into one of those kinds of programs? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have to have somebody accept you? Do you have to apply? I mean, what are the hurdles you have to get over?
I don't know how any of the other programs work, and Facebook only did this for 1 year.
Okay.
Right? I know. It's kind of disappointing because it was such a great program. Yeah. But they had us put in an application, fill out an application, and then do a video interview, and then do a phone interview. And I remember it was like a 10-minute phone interview. You know, you can't see anyone. It was just all over the phone. It was Dave McClure. Later, I find out it's Shervin Pishavar, who's now an investor in TaskRabbit. And all these people just firing questions at me, firing. I had never seen these people, met these people, nothing. It was so intimidating. But, you know, I really was able to sell the vision and get the point across in that. And so they invited me out. And we ended up being one of the only companies sort of from far away, from outside of the Bay Area, to come out and participate, which was such a great opportunity for us. So.
And in a way, they're vetting you because they're going to get a stake. They're investing in you, and
absolutely,
they're going to get a stake in the company.
Yep.
So it's a form of investment for them as well.
It is.
But the training is great because that they know that you're going to get the basics handled.
Yes.
Right?
I got so much out of it.
Yeah.
So much out of it. And particularly around the end, there was a demo day and a lot of networking with potential investors. And that's how I met Ann from Floodgate Fund and Steve Anderson from Baseline. And those are the guys that led that seed round.
So when you watch the Social Network movie, we were talking about this beforehand, that resonated a little, the whole moving out to California.
Yeah, he did that too, didn't he? Mark did the same thing.
You probably didn't do a party house like that, I'm guessing. But.
No, you know, Kevin Kobe and I partying it up. And, no, it's pretty funny because I think, you know, when I flew back home, I remember the first time after the first week of the incubator program. And Kevin spent the whole time back in Boston. And the first time I flew home, I said, I think we should sell the house. I think you need to quit your job. And I think we need to move across the country.
And you know what's cooler than $1 million, Kevin?
Yeah, right. A billion. Yeah, exactly. And that sold him.
What was his reaction?
You know, honestly, he saw, one, how hard I'd been working on the project. And he had been working hard, too. I mean, you know, it was kind of the two of us doing this. And then he just saw my energy coming out of this program and my enthusiasm and my passion for it. And he was all in.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
And Kobe was in, too?
Kobe was in. I was telling you before we started, we drove across the country. And we did that because we have this 100-pound dog that you can't fly, right? Mm-hmm. And so he had his head out the window, like, the whole way down Route 80.
So he got something out
He loved
That's
it.
Good.
Yeah, it was
That's
great. Great. Time of his life that week.
He's got bugs in his teeth from every state in the union. So you get to the San Francisco Bay Area, and did things start changing? I mean, first of all, you're now going to be in more than just Boston, right?
Right.
I mean, did you start putting rabbits in San Francisco?
Yes, immediately. We knew that San Francisco would be the perfect second city.
It's similar to Boston, isn't it?
It is. It's very
geographically constrained, neighborhood driven. Yeah.
Exactly. And so we launched San Francisco similar to Boston, but a lot faster. I knew what to look for in TaskRabbits. We had this vetting process in place now that we could just run them through. And the similarity, though, was we started in a neighborhood. We started in Noe Valley, in Soma, in the Castro. And it grew from there. But that hyper-focus on zip codes and getting liquidity in one of those communities first was really important to providing just a great user experience.
So are you bootstrapping from neighborhood to neighborhood in financially as well as just in marketing?
Yeah, we did at the time.
Because you don't have the big funding yet.
Exactly.
So you can't grow just kind of... In some ways, that's one of the nice things about not having money. Is that you only can do what you can do, and you just kind of bootstrap.
You have to focus.
Yeah.
You really
have
to focus, and be really careful about every single thing that you're looking at.
What were the big challenges at this time for you?
At that time, it was really around resources were so constrained, particularly on the engineering side. So at that point...
Kevin your sysadmin right now, or do you?
Yeah, he's always been the sysadmin. He's finally come on full time after we raised the A round.
Really?
Yeah,
he's kept his job.
He did. Yeah.
Good for him.
But when we raised the seed, the first hire I made was someone to take over all of engineering. So Brian Leonard, who's our VP of engineering, he and I worked together at IBM for 5 years. And so when I raised that round of funding, the $1.8 million seed. That's when Brian came on board. And so I was able to hand over the reins of coding to him. But it was still one engineer. And then myself. And then Kevin doing sysadmin stuff. And then we had maybe one other team member that was helping with marketing. So resources were really constrained.
So there was just a few of you. Three or four.
There was just three or four of us at that point.
Wow.
Exactly. And we had one operations guy, too, that moved from Boston to San Francisco with us. And that was it.
So once you're not programming, what are you focusing on now?
Yeah. My God. Just everything else.
Recruitment, marketing, fundraising.
Fundraising. Full-time job, by the way. I had no idea. You realize once you've gone through a few rounds that when you're talking to investors, that is your full-time job. And that's also a process that's never ending. That was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. So you close around and you think, I'm going to be able to shift gears and put my head down and really build the business. And rarely does that happen. It'll be like a month or two, 8 weeks later, and then it kind of you.
Is that because your burn rate is going up? Or?
No, it's just more like you're always preparing for that next round. Mm. You're always thinking about what milestones do I need to get to and what relationships should I start building now. And so it's just a constant ongoing effect.
Is it because you need more money?
Well,
at some point, you're profitable, right?
At some point, you're cash flow positive and you're profitable.
Right.
Absolutely. And with a company like TaskRabbit, there isn't a ton of overhead, right? It's mostly people and hosting and resources. It's not a lot of, you know, product or inventory or anything like that. And so it's really about, you know, being able to scale a market as fast as you're growing on the business side as well and kind of making that balance. Now, as we launch new cities. So now we're in Boston, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco. We just launched Austin at Southwest, which went fantastic.
How exciting.
Congratulations. Atlanta, Dallas, and Houston are coming.
Yeah, in Seattle as well.
Yeah.
So now we have this distributed workforce across the country. We have almost over 4,000 TaskRabbits that are active in these cities. And we have actually another few thousand on a waiting list waiting to become activated in areas we're not open in yet. So we're always looking at the community to help us drive where we go to next.
Now, you recently handed over the reins of CEO as well. Does that take a little pressure off the constant fundraising? Can you outsource that? Or are you still, they need to see the founder. They need to talk to the visionary.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, between Eric and I as well, it's a partnership. And
Eric's the new CEO.
He is, yeah. And I brought him on board because I did want to shift my focus more to the product side and engineering side. I was really missing that. And technology and product is always something I've been really passionate about. And I wanted to find a partner that was just as passionate about those business pieces and scaling the company as I am about product. And so brought Eric on board, and it's just been a great working relationship. I still sit on the board as well. So it's myself and Eric and a couple of our investors on the board. And so, you know, still very involved at that level.
But you get to spend a little less time on the constant fundraising gambit?
A little bit less.
Not too much.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, as the founder, I still want to know who's going to be investing in the company and why they're going to make great partners and, you know, why we should be taking money from them. So those are all reasons why I still spend a lot of time.
Now, how do you divide that up so that you're still working on the product and making it better and improving it all the time when you're on this constant fundraising merry-go-round?
Yeah, I've been lucky enough recently to just hire some amazing people on the team that I can really trust to be there day to day. And particularly after I brought Eric on board, I thought actually I'd have more time to spend on product. And I was a little surprised about how much my time ramped up on sort of the evangelist side and still talking with investor side and being part of board and strategic decisions. And I still didn't have enough time to spend on product as I wanted to. And I'm still feeling guilty. Honestly, every day I'd walk into that office and look at my team of engineers and designers and just feel guilty that I wasn't there. And so I brought on board a woman named Seema Shah, and she came out of eBay, great product experience. She's our director of product now, and I just trust her. And, you know, I meet with her a few times a week and stay very involved, but I know that day to day someone is there supporting that team, so that just makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, so you see her making decisions, or you're like, yes, that's what I would have done.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's great. She is my proxy.
That's awesome.
On the ground, yeah.
So now that you have investors, in fact, you just got a big round.
We did. We're pretty excited about the B round we just raised. Yeah.
How much did you raise in the B round?
It was just over $18 million.
So that's a lot of money.
We've raised about $25 million to date.
Shimony Christmas.
I know.
Does it cost that much?
You know, we're not burning through it.
Right.
Yeah, no. You know, it's interesting.
Did you raise more than you need?
We raised enough where we feel like we can accelerate our execution to get to a lot more cities. And to build the team in a way that supports that growth.
Right.
So that every time someone posts a task, no matter where they are, they have a consistently amazing user experience. And that's non-trivial. Because, you know, there's nothing stopping us from just opening up everywhere at once and just saying, hey, it's a free-for-all, everyone post your tasks. But that would be a bad user experience. And, you know, we have a 24/7 customer service center that's in-house. We don't outsource that. Everything is in-house. And we're just really, really careful with our quality and that user experience and pretty obsessed with getting that right.
And so that's costly.
It is costly.
Yeah.
And it's worth it, in my opinion. You know, I think most of the funding to date, we've invested in the people, in the team, in the product.
Right.
We're not spending a ton of money on marketing. We're not spending a ton of money in other areas. It's really about the people and the team and the product.
How much pressure do the investors put on you to go in certain directions or to turn it around? Or do they start saying, what's your exit strategy? Or are
they
just
want free tasks?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they want free tasks. So, I mean, how has that been for you? Because do you give up control in addition to financial interest as you bring in investors, right?
Yep, absolutely. So I've been incredibly fortunate, and I've heard horror stories left and right. But the investors that I've had the opportunity to work with have just been so supportive, so respectful and trusting myself, trusting the team, trusting Eric as well. So we have, in the latest round, Lightspeed Ventures led that round. It was Justin Caldback and Jeremy Liu. And prior to that, Shasta Ventures led the A round, which was Sean Flynn and Todd Francis. And then I had these amazing seed investors as well, Ann and Steve and Rob Hayes from First Round. I mean, this group is just insane, like so great to work with, so supportive, and they really do leave it up to us to set these strategic decisions and directions and kind of let us run with it. They're there to guide and to check in, and if we want to brainstorm or bounce ideas around, they're always responsive. But they've, you know, I can't imagine a better group to work with, so I've been pretty fortunate in
that
regard.
Exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd never done this before, so you
had no idea what I was getting into, honestly.
And yet, it sounds like you put it together right.
And you know, and I would credit that, too, to getting early guidance from Scott and other mentors to help make those right introductions, to help meet the right people. And, you know, when you get the right people around you, as your network grows, hopefully it's more of the right people, right? More of the same. And so that's what's happened with us.
Do you want? What is your long-term goal for TaskRabbit?
You know, TaskRabbit is really about disrupting the global labor force. I feel like...
Wow, that's a bigger goal than...
Yeah, I mean, we...
Just a bunch of people running around doing chores.
Exactly. We have only scratched the surface.
Okay, well, what do you mean by that?
So, we've only scratched the surface with what we've done to date.
I like it that you have a grand vision.
Absolutely.
Do you think that's important?
I do, yeah. I mean, I feel like you need some huge thing that you're working towards... and it has to be, you know, a little bit sort of unreachable. Otherwise, you'll never progress and get there.
So you're going to disrupt the global labor force. How are you going to do that?
So think about, you know, sort of how people think about work right now. It's that 9-to-5 job. You're kind of working for the man, putting your time in. I think increasingly, and I think this has to do with economic downturn and trends we've seen as well, people are starting to rethink what work means to them. And this idea that we can create a platform that empowers people to be micro-entrepreneurs, to be their own bosses, set their own schedules, say what they're good at doing, set their prices, and decide when they want to work, is huge. And more people, I think, are adapting this sort of freelancer style of work. And so, you know, I get emails from people all over, every day from all over the world, asking when TaskRabbit is going to come to their city because they want to join, and, you know, they're handyman, they're carpenters, they're yoga instructors. They want to build out their storefronts and profiles on TaskRabbit. And so,
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you really, it's not a kind of anonymous TaskRabbit. You're really encouraging them to start their own business, in effect.
Absolutely. I mean, think a little bit about how eBay stores came about and those power sellers and, you know, allowing collectors to set up their own businesses and sell things online. Etsy is another great example of empowering people to sell these handmade goods. And if you look at the services, there's nothing out there like that for services. And there's people in your neighborhood that have skills, that have specialties, that have free time that they're willing to offer. And they need a place to share that.
Yeah, we're not in villages of a dozen houses where you know what everybody's skills are.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's valuable. There was a study recently talking about the fact that Generation Xers are getting a bad rap with the baby boomers because they're passing up promotions. They're like, well, okay, we want to make you a manager. They're like, no, I don't want to.
Right.
It's partly because they see that that's just a dead end.
Right.
And partly because they want to have more control over their own jobs and their own lives. So I think you're definitely on to something that is a huge trend now.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you plan to go international at some point?
We do. You know, we're thinking a lot about it this year. I think that there's a lot of opportunity internationally. We've had people reach out to us from different countries wanting to help bring TaskRabbit there. So as fast as we can, we're going to hit some of those major cities.
Wow. This is a really interesting growth curve you've had here, just a couple of years. And so how many TaskRabbits are there total?
Just over 4,000 across the country.
And how many tasks have been done?
So, gosh.
Do you know?
In the hundreds of thousands. I'm not quite sure.
What is the biggest challenge, you think? Is it explaining what this is? What is the resistance? Is there resistance?
Yeah, the challenges have changed over time. Early on, the biggest challenge was around trust. Why would I trust someone
who is this
to run these errands?
Yeah.
We've overcome that somewhat with the vetting process, with this reputation engine that we've built on site. And people, the consumer, are getting more comfortable with the idea of sharing things with neighbors. It's just the way it is. But now the big challenge is really, how do I use the service? What would I use it for? Giving people ideas, giving them examples and use cases.
You've really done that in the front page. The first thing you see is example sites, templates for how to do this.
Well, yeah, it was the first thing when I was sitting here looking at it, and I was like, ooh, house cleaning.
Right. There's a reason for that.
It's probably the case, if you can get people to go to TaskRabbit, and you make it very easy to sign up, you just click on your Facebook profile, and it's a... then they're going to, oh, well, I actually would like some help. So the first thing, do you think about advertising? Do you think about billboards? How do you market this? How do you get people to make that first? I presume you've designed this in such a way, so if they get to the site, you're going to convert them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, to this day, 75% of our active user base comes from word of mouth and PR.
That's true in all.
And it's amazing, right? And it's free, which is great.
Do you do Google AdWords? Do you do anything like that?
We've done a few tests. We're not pouring a ton of money into that stuff because... honestly, you know, we're not seeing it scale the way we would want to.
Right.
So
how do you encourage word of mouth?
So one is making sure that every time someone posts a task, they're having a great experience. And in particular, first-time task posters.
So you're really focusing on customer experience.
It starts there. We have a really cool program that we kicked off that's been really successful. And it's called the Welcome Wagon. And so if we identify a first-time task poster, and this is kind of automated through the system, a TaskRabbit picks it up. If that TaskRabbit is part of the welcome wagon, then we give them extra money, basically, to surprise that task poster and go above and beyond.
Nice.
So, for instance, some examples have been...
How smart is that? Whose idea was that? That's brilliant.
I know.
It's a very Zappos-like sort of approach.
Well, we're obsessed with Zappos, too, and delivering happiness and that whole model. So one example is first-time task poster the other day. Her TaskRabbit brought her a bag of chocolates. And she immediately, you know, was floored and so excited and took a photo with the TaskRabbit in the chocolate, posted it on Facebook, shared with all her friends. And
well, look what Mark Fraunfelder did, right?
Yeah, right.
Right. Exactly.
That's what you need.
That's exactly what we need.
That's
we
better
need
than
people
any advertising.
Have a great experience.
Yeah, that's better
and
than
then
any.
And tell their friends.
And what's nice is that the internet now really supports that kind of word of mouth because you've got all these social networks. Everybody has a network now.
Exactly.
So you're really playing into a strength of the internet.
Yep.
You really don't need advertising. You don't need marketing. You don't need billboards.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one question that Kingy in our chat room was curious about is relations to unions. So you don't cross into too many union competitive areas yet, but if you were to get into something like plumbing or you know, some of the handyman type areas, that's a tricky area to navigate.
It is. Yeah, that's definitely something that we're going to have to research and look more into. We just made an acquisition of a company called SkillSlate in December, which is a three-person team, and they were 100% focused on skill-based professional tasks. So these handyman, plumbers, carpenters. So part of the reason why we brought on that team is so that they could help us think through, you know, strategizing up into that model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how does... You have TaskRabbits in multiple states. Are they all contract employees? What is your relationship to them?
They're independent contractors,
okay.
Which means that we also 1099 them. So if they make over $600 a year through TaskRabbit,
makes it much simpler for you, though.
Exactly.
You're not responsible for FICA, for insurance, for any of that stuff.
Right. So we send them the 1099s, and they're good to
go. Do you indemnify them? Do you insure them? How does that cover?
We don't yet, but we're actually looking into a way to do that. And actually, increasingly, as we're thinking about working with more small businesses, because small businesses right now are actually making up a large portion of the service. They're posting things like office help, administrative work.
Mm-hmm. Asking for help.
Yeah, they're asking for help.
Yeah, I was looking at your bookkeeping, and I said, well, we could get somebody in here to help us. Yeah,
exactly.
It makes sense.
So when you get into working with small businesses those are areas that we're going to be developing and are going to need to support. Yeah.
Right.
You know, before we let you go, I wanted to jump back pre-TaskRabbit and ask you a question about how you got into programming.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, especially for a lot of our female viewers, they're like...
Yeah, you're
a
great role model.
You know, how does somebody like you end up in that position?
Yeah. Well, so let's see. I
Were
was always
a math nerd.
Okay. Leo called it. Math nerd. Yeah, I was. You know, I was just thinking about this the other day, too, and thinking about even in elementary school, sort of all of my math classes. I can remember every single math class and math teacher I had. And I don't know if this means anything or not, but every single math teacher I had through elementary school and high school were all female.
That means a lot.
Isn't that kind of crazy?
Something. That's huge.
Right? And so
it becomes the norm for you.
Yeah,
you don't think it's odd for women to be involved.
Well, no matter what those stinky boys say, you got a teacher who's a woman, so it's okay.
I never, ever thought about it. And I went on to a women's college where I majored in math and computer science. Again, never thought about the fact that this might be different or weird or unique at all. And still actually don't give it that much
thought. It's a lot of stats to support that, though. When you go to a girls' school or a girls' college where there's much higher STEM interest among the women, they're for some reason just not turned off by it being a male-dominated field.
Right.
What college did you go to?
Sweetbriar College in Virginia.
That's great. Yep. And so they encouraged you, and you felt comfortable doing it.
Yep, and I loved it. And then, you know, I started as a programmer at Iris, Ray Ozzie's company, and had a lot of great mentors there as well that were male and female, actually. One of my senior leads, architect, engineers, Art Thomas, I still stay in touch with him about how TaskRabbit's going.
That's neat.
And he's the one that sort of really helped me learn to code early on.
That's really...
What is it about math that you loved or still love?
You know, for me, I think it's all about having sort of black and white and binary calls. Either it's right or it's wrong. There is no gray area. And it's very disciplined. And I feel like any problem you're given, whether it's a theorem or an equation, if you just work through it step by step, you're going to get to the answer. And I think that iterative process to me is something that, you know, I've done at TaskRabbit as well.
Yeah. Although I can see why you'd want to be getting back into the engineering and the product, because the world of venture capitalism is far from black and white.
I know. Very mushy. It's so true. Yeah. So true. Yeah. Exactly.
Leah, it's so nice to see you again, and thank you for coming up here.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Yeah, and I think that it's really great for us to get women CEOs, women founders, women engineers on the air to remind all the girls. We have lots of girls watching that you can do it. And that's the best way to break the glass ceiling, isn't it? Is to do it yourself. Start your own business.
Absolutely.
The heck with them. I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah. It's not rocket science.
You like it, though, huh?
It.
You like running your own business?
I do. It's a blast. I mean, I think, I'm getting to use skills that I didn't even know I had.
Yeah.
Just on a daily basis.
It's a real challenge.
So it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Leah.
Thank you so much.
TaskRabbit.com. Very easy to sign up. And then I'm sure there's a little hump you have to go over to do your first task. But they'll make it easy, and you might get chocolate. Just
never
keep
know.
That in mind.
That's
you
right.
never know. You never know. We do triangulation every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv. And if you want to watch live, we appreciate it because our chat room is fantastic. They give us great feedback. We, as you can tell, ask a lot of questions that the chat room give us. It's a great way for you to interact with us. But, you know, you don't have to watch live because we always make it available, both audio and video. At twit.tv or wherever podcasts are. Subscribe so that way you won't miss.
Wherever podcasts are sold.
Better podcasts are sold. Who's next week?
Katarina Fake.
I love her.
Oh, isn't she great?
She's
another
great
inspiration,
yes,
huh? The founder of Flickr. And some other companies, too, as a matter of fact. And Pinwheel, yeah.
Is there the current thing?
Yeah, she pivoted or pinned. Anyway, thank you so much, Leah. Thanks for being here. Thank you, Tom Merritt. And thank you all for watching. We'll see you next week on Triangulation.